You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome to the Saturday morning edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm Mike Blewett along with George Kurtz. Psyched to have you here for week 15. I'm back from a week off last week, but I'm re-energized. I'm ready to go. We had our company Christmas party last night. I don't have a lot of tales to tell because I'm not that kind of guy. I don't want to break guy code or any other kind of code. But it's good to have you listening to us this morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're here till 10. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning. Please download the app. Please tell all your friends. And I'm happy to have George here during a mini blizzard here in New York. How you doing, George?
I don't know if I'd go quite as far as to call it a blizzard, but man, looking out my window right now, I can't believe how much snow is coming down. What happened to an inch or so?
Yeah, it's, luckily I take the train into the studio. I don't have to drive very far to do that, but George got a little bit of a drive, so we mixed it up. We're doing this a little bit in a bit of a remote capacity, but yeah, it's nice. A little bit of a white Christmas early on, and supposedly it's going to melt pretty fast, so we don't have to suffer the terrible amounts of shoveling and all that kind of stuff that comes with it.
That's what I'm waiting for. I'm thinking the same thing, Mike. I'm wondering, oh my God, after the show, I got to go outside and shovel. I just checked the weather. It's going to start raining around 10. Yeah. Maybe we'll wait till noon, see if that rain washes it away.
Yeah, just kind of push that slush off to the side and just do it one time as opposed to having to do several layers or several rounds of shoveling. So, George, good to be back with you. I know I had that week off last week. Hopefully, Dane Martinez filled in aptly for me. And
Dane, the spitting statistician, as he said about 18,000 times.
The spitting statistician, that's right. He talks faster than anybody on this network, which is saying a lot.
People think I talk fast. He blows me away.
Yeah, he packs a lot of information into the 2 hours or the hour or the 3 hours that he's on air. But in any event, speaking of somebody that didn't fill in aptly, it was John Fossil, the interim head coach of the Rams. The Rams put up yet another putrid display on Thursday. For you fantasy owners, and I'm included in this, it was a rough day if you didn't have Russ Wilson or Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett finally explodes, George. I guarantee there's owners that have Lockett on their bench on Thursday night because they just weren't sure if it was going to be the week for him. But he explodes for 9 for 170 and a big score.
Yeah, I had Lockett in two leagues. Started him in one. Started him in my points league because I had a couple of receivers, Moncrief for one, who went down last week. So I sort of had no choice. I did not start him in my, I think it was the FSWA league, the playoffs. So I wish I would have. That's 26 points. I'm not going to get back.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Good day for Russ Wilson. Didn't throw the ball a ton. Didn't have to. It was a 3-touchdown performance. He throws the one pick, but 229 yards and 3 scores. You'll take that. That's really at least a 20-point game, and for some of you, probably a little bit higher in the 27-point range. So good day for Russ Wilson against, obviously, a defense that hasn't been playing quite as well as of late.
Yeah, Wilson looked, he was up and down. Right, I mean, the whole Seattle offense was up and down. They couldn't get the run game going. Wilson did find some open receivers, but let's face it, if he doesn't find Lockett for a 57-yard score, things might look a little different. I thought the Seattle offense as a whole looked a little sluggish. I was expecting more. You know, I knew they'd win the game, but I thought they might get to the 30s, 34, 35 points here. So I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think really the story, obviously, is Tyler Lockett with that huge game. You're right, he had the big play, but that's how Tyler Lockett operates. I thought the big story really was the fact that the two starting running backs, and this hurt me. In fact, I had both guys, one in each league, Rawls and Todd Gurley, combined for 38 touches for 75 yards.
Well, I don't think Gurley was no shock. Didn't expect much from him. He hasn't got anything all year. Rawls was a surprise. And he got the opportunities, including goal line opportunities. Didn't push it home. So, when it comes to fantasy, I like, as long as my guys got the shot, I'll take that. Because half the battle is getting the opportunity, getting the targets. Rawls got it. He didn't come through with it. So, you know, hey, you chalk it up, bad luck. It's not like anyone's going to take his job. They don't have another goal line back there, so Rose will be fine. Just didn't work out Thursday night.
Yeah, it's one of those trust the process type of moments, right? If you tell me a starting running back on that team versus that defense, which, listen, the Rams defense is the strength of that team, but even still, if you're going to promise me 23 touches, I'll take just about anybody, right? It doesn't matter the matchup or the player. There's some guys you frankly don't trust at this point, but I'm going to trust Thomas Rawls if he gets the ball 23 times, even with the offensive line issues that they have.
Yeah, of course you are. I mean, I would trust the Rawls as well. Like I said, it was the right move. It just didn't work out for whatever reason. You know, he wasn't getting the running room that night. Maybe the Rams came in saying, hey, we're going to stop the running game, force Russell Wilson to beat us. You know, and if that was the case, well, Russell Wilson beat you. So it didn't work out either way. So like I said, I don't have Rawls in any league, but if I did, I wouldn't be beating myself up over it. I think Moses had him as a no worse than a high-end running back, too.
Yeah, I mean, I had Rawls, DeMarco Murray, Jay Ajayi in one league. And of the three, I knew I was going to start Rawls. I don't really love DeMarco going up against the Chiefs, but frankly, I like him a little bit more than Ajayi going up against the Jets. But Rawls was the easy one there for me, and to the tune of 4.9 points, I'm in a hole. From a projection standpoint, I'm in a hole in my semifinals in that league. So we'll see how that plays out. Unfortunately, most of you came up pretty empty. Tyler Lockett owners, kudos to you for playing him the other night. So, you know, one other thing I wanted to talk about, George, obviously, since last time we've gotten a chance to speak, a few things have happened. The big thing that happened on Monday was that Jeff Fisher was released by the Rams, relieved of his duties. John Fossil, interim head coach. And now, what do we do next? We talked at length this season about Jeff Fisher's record and when the axe was going to fall and if it was going to fall. They kind of botched the release of the news about the extension, which was done long before the season, and then he ends up being fired just less than a week after the extension is announced, despite the fact that the extension was done many months before. So here's my question. First of all, does Les Snead, the GM, does he keep his job? They've leveraged a lot of picks. They've leveraged a lot of draft picks into players that, frankly, aren't working out and into a team that is sliding towards a 4-win season. So do you think he sticks around for this continued transition in Los Angeles?
Well, it's more than likely going to depend on what head coach they hire. And what I mean by is this. I expect the Rams to hire a name, a big name. Right? I mean, it's Los Angeles Rams. I mean, Kroenke has, what, eight? He's worth $8 billion or something silly like that.
He's one of the richer owners in the league, yeah.
Right. He can hire whoever he wants and pay him $10 million a year if he wants. And if that head coach wants his own GM, then bye-bye, Mr. Snead, right? That's the way I look at it. I think the only reason why Snead still has a job is, well, wait, see who the head coach is. You know, let's say they're going to get Harbaugh out of Michigan. You know, I don't know anything here. I'm just throwing out a name here.
Yeah.
But let's say they're going to get Harbaugh out of Michigan. Harbaugh may want his own guy as GM. Or he may want to run player moves. You know, whatever it is. Like I said, the new coach is going to be a name. I'd be shocked if it's not a name guy. So that new coach may want to, you know, what did Parcells say? Do you want me to cook the dinner? I should buy the groceries?
Yep.
So that's what the new head coach may want to do. So I don't think Snead holds the job. No.
Yeah. I think it will be tough for him as well. I think the two things, as you mentioned, are very much tied together, who they bring in. You mentioned Harbaugh. I think that is a name that could be in the mix. I think the only college he was ever going to coach at was Michigan. I think his goal is to try to win a Super Bowl. I think that's what Harbaugh's, if he has his eyes on the prize, that's what they are. Ultimately, could he become a lifer at Michigan? Yeah, it's a place where I'm sure he feels comfortable and he could do that. But I think ultimately he will be getting back to the NFL someday. It would be a tough situation for him to sort of leave his alma mater in the lurch in some ways, because now a coaching transition for them would be even tougher because some of the big name college coaches have taken leave to the bigger jobs. So I don't think he takes his job, but as you're saying, George, if $10 million is on the table or $11 million is on the table per year and you have some player personnel control a la Belichick in New England, then I think it's something that you consider. I've seen Tom Coughlin's name thrown in there, despite the fact that he's 70 years old. He still seems to want to coach. And, you know, if they really wanted to bring in somebody for a relatively short-term stint and have Coughlin pass it off to somebody else, I could see that. But I actually don't think he'll be the move. Sean Payton's name has been bandied about a little bit. I would note that Sean Payton just signed a 5-year, $45 million extension with the Saints. This is back in March. So that would be quite a contract to leave behind, and there would be a significant amount of compensation that the Rams would have to pony up to him, A, and B, towards the Saints for effectively stealing their coach. So, you know, as you're saying, George, there's these... It seems that they want to make a splash higher, but with a lot of the names that have come up in these potential coaching searches as we look towards places like Jacksonville and maybe Buffalo, where we expect coaches will be relieved of their duties at some point on Black Monday in a couple of weeks, a lot of those defensive coordinators and offensive coordinators, those guys aren't big names, but those are the ones that are going to be up for those jobs.
Yeah, I think that's the problem for the Rams. I think you're exactly right. I think it's Los Angeles, so you're thinking glitzy. You know, they need to sell. But I had the ratings for the Rams game on the Thursday night were terrible in Los Angeles. 10.1, I think. Like Seattle was, 46.1.
Wow.
So I'll let you know the difference there. Now it's Los Angeles, big town. A lot of different people. You're never going to get great ratings. It's like in New York. You never get great ratings. Too many different people watching too many different things. But 10.1 lets you know the team is not selling right now. Really, if you think of the Rams, what are you going to watch? I mean, Goff is not there yet. Gurley's taking a big step back. They have no wide receivers. There's just no one there. There's no sex there. It isn't there. There's nothing to sell. So right now, I think that's what they have to do there. And maybe that's where the coach comes in. You could hire a big-name coach. But as you're hitting the, and I completely agree with you, who is that big name? There's no one out there. Coughlin, he's not a big name. And as you said, he'd be a guy who you're literally hiring for a year, maybe to a transition guy. And then, and maybe that's what it comes down to until you find that big name. Do you want to hire the hot coordinator? Can you sell the hot coordinator? I don't think so. The one name I'll throw at you, maybe Josh McDaniels out of New England.
I could see that. I think that's a big enough name, too. I never believe in the splash hire mentality, and I understand places like Dallas, and in this case, L.A., feel like they need to do that. But realistically, you just want the guy that's going to be able to help Jared Goff as much as possible. He's your absolute biggest asset on the team, despite the fact that he'll likely not be the best player. He's the most important asset on the team right now. You've leveraged a lot in order to put him in place, and if he better be the franchise guy. Otherwise, you've taken a massive step back. Gurley is the best offensive player, but if they can't block for him, he's going to be relatively useless. It's disappointing because you see Gurley with almost exactly the same number of touches this year as last year. He's hundreds of yards behind his totals from last year. So he's catching the ball a little bit more, but he's not turning it into much. And frankly, he's getting stonewalled at the line of scrimmage on way too many plays. So that's a little bit on the Rams. I do think it's an interesting ongoing discussion. You'll see some names flow into it. I know McDaniel and Pete Carroll and other people have turned it down, but like you mentioned earlier, $10 million a year is a lot to turn down unless you're scared away from the organization and you don't think there's an opportunity for success, whether you think Kroenke's meddling or you're not going to get the player personnel decisions that you would ultimately like to make, then that is something to consider. So that's where we are with the Rams. As far as Seattle is concerned, they keep plugging along. I think what you said earlier is the most accurate thing to describe them, is that you still see offensive consistency that you probably wouldn't have expected to see at this point during the season. You think you have your finger on the pulse as to why they remain inconsistent offensively?
I think it's the offensive line. Yeah. I think that's the easy what to pick at there. It's just not very good.
Yeah.
I think Seattle is going to be, on Old School Fantasy, we do the power rankings, Scott Engel, myself and Cha-Cha. I think we do it every Tuesday. And who's the best team in the NFC? Every team you can think of has warts. Really, it's in football when you think about it. But every team. You want to go Dallas? Well, we know, hey, you got Dak Prescott having some struggles here, but defense is average at best, and that's probably being nice. At the Falcons, sort of the same problem. Defense is average at best. The Seahawks have no offensive line. The offense is sputtering, and they don't play well on the road. You can make an argument right now that the best team might be the Packers. They're 7-6, but they seem to have fixed their fix their problems. They won a whole bunch of road. If they get into the playoffs, they may be the one team that you don't want to play because the defense seems to have fixed their problems.
That's crazy that we would talk about them. Just a few weeks ago, people were, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but just a few weeks ago, people were ready to throw them out, throw the baby out with the bathwater. They were done. They're falling apart. Rodgers doesn't look great. But we've seen the offense get hot. And by the way, after all this time, Aaron Rodgers is the top quarterback in fantasy football. We're 14 weeks in, and he's at the top of the heap. So, you know, they are the team that could get hot. The Giants, you know, they're maddeningly inconsistent, but they have these couple of big wins.
You think about the Giants. Everyone's on Dak Prescott for the way he played Sunday night, and he was bad.
Yeah.
But if Dallas would have won that game, everyone would be crucifying Eli because he was worse.
Yeah.
My God, he was terrible against a Dallas defense that's very beatable. But he was, I mean, he was bad.
I mean, there's a common thread. This is our first segment. We're talking about four different teams who have considerable offensive line issues that are creating offensive inconsistencies. The Rams can't run it. The Seahawks can't block either. The Giants have Eli with nervous feet. And, you know, we have some other teams out there that just can't consistently get it done up on the offensive line. And you're right. Eli would have been crucified. I think if you've watched him this year, you know it's not a banner year for him. It's not necessarily his fault. Their first-round draft pick that they wanted to be a left tackle probably can't even be a right tackle. But he's playing there right now, and that's the best of what they have. You can't just make a switch at this point during the season because there's nobody better to take that position. So we'll see how that goes. I think you're right. The NFC is a total head-scratcher. In the AFC, you're right, but there are a few really legitimate teams, with New England, I think, putting it on the Ravens the other night. That game was nowhere near as close as the score, but New England is certainly proving that they have a path to the one seed right now. And Kansas City, not a team you want to mess with, but they play too many close games. They're going to get bumped off in the playoffs because they play every game too tight. So in any event, we'll continue to talk about that throughout the show. We've got Gary Davenport from Fantasy Sharks on at 9 a.m. It's George and I till 10 o'clock. We'll break down every game over the next 2 hours. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blue along with George Kurtz. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning. This is the Saturday edition where we'll be here till 10. Gary Davenport again at 9 o'clock. Breaking down the games all day long as George and I get through this New York snowstorm. I think Blizzard was probably a little heavy-handed earlier, but here we sit. And luckily I'm in the warmth of a studio. So, George, you know, moving on to the games today, we have our first Saturday game of the season that occurs tonight, actually here in New York with the Dolphins traveling in to take on the Jets. It's probably not everybody's favorite matchup based on how the Jets have played over the last 3 months. But here we sit, Saturday slate, and a big fantasy impact is, you know, what are people going to do with Matt Forte? He's saying he's going to tough it out despite popping and crackling in his knee. What's the latest there, and what are your thoughts on the Matt Forte, Bilal Powell situation?
You want to see?
There we go. Okay, sorry, I didn't hear you, George. Go ahead.
Don't you want to see what the what the Falcons did with Julio Jones? Just inactivate him this way. Hey, he's done. You don't have to worry about him. You can move on. I think it just makes things cloudy. Now, I don't expect Forte to be all that good tonight. The weather's going to be lousy. It won't be snow, but I think it's going to be raining tonight, or rainy, to say the least. Like I said, I wish he wouldn't play. If I had to choose between the two, Mike, I'd rather have Powell. But, you know, will Forte get 8 to 10 carries, just enough to make him annoying? That's what I'm afraid of. Is he going to get just enough to make him annoying? If I had to choose between the two, I want Powell. If I'm a Forte owner, I really wish they would just deactivate him. This way I can move on.
I totally agree with you. So we had our Fantasy Sports Radio Network Christmas party last night in or Anthem Sports Media. It's the holding company, the company at large for the Fantasy Sports Radio Network and the Fantasy Sports Television Network and a few other media properties. But in any event, we had our Christmas party at the Grand Street Tavern in downtown Manhattan. And obviously, there's a lot of fantasy experts in the room. We're all chatting, and the Forte thing came up a number of times, which I guess what's surprising to me is a veteran guy like this that's put himself through this for this team and for the Bears is dealing with a knee injury, just take the week off. Like, what do you, what he's saying the right things as far as being a good teammate, but if I'm him, what are you doing? You just try to get another year out of this. I mean, the end is near, right? In general. He's going to run out of gas. Why would he be so eager to get back in here for this game? Do you know?
Listen, I'm not going to knock the guy for wanting to play. I think that shows a lot of heart and more power to him.
Yeah.
I just, for fantasy owners, I wish he wouldn't. You know, and I agree with you. I mean, it doesn't make any sense business-wise. The team's not going anywhere. They're done. You have nothing to prove. You're Matt Forte. Okay, I mean, you're 31 years old. You signed a 3-year deal. I mean, the Jets might release you in the offseason, fine. But you don't need to prove anything to anybody. So I guess if you're, like I said, on a business standpoint, and maybe his agent's even telling him this, why are you playing tonight? You know, there's really no reason to do it. I get that. Yes, for fantasy purposes, I wish the Jets would just make him deactivate him an hour and a half before the game. It would make life so much easier.
Yeah, honestly, they should. That would be the right thing to do. Bilal Powell's obviously an adequate, at worst, fill-in for him. He dominated last week, and it's something that they feel like he can have an opportunity to do again. And Dolphins are a tough defense, but they've been inconsistent at times. I think if I'm the coach, I want Powell in there, and whoever else at backing up Powell. I think they're fine with it. That's the way I'd roll. Like you said, it's admirable. But if I'm Forte, I'm raising my hand and taking the week off. You can always come back next week if you want on this 4-9 team and possibly 4-10 team by the time he comes back. So a little bit there. Obviously, Brandon Marshall's been maddeningly inconsistent. You had Robbie Anderson with a game. So what do you think of the receiving core here working with Bryce Petty?
I don't.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I don't. Yeah. I'm not taking any. I mean, it comes down to what your roster construction is, of course. That's just like any question does. But all in all, no, I don't want to start Anderson. I don't want to start Brandon Marshall. I don't want to start anybody on the Jets, really, outside of Powell. Powell's the only guy I'll give some thought to. We'll say it again. It's Bryce Petty. The weather's going to be lousy tonight. I mean, what are you expecting? Where's your upside with any of these guys? And that's my problem here. I have to think on your roster you'll have better options. If you've made it this far, that you're going to have better options than Robbie Anderson. Maybe you got screwed. You know, maybe you had Julio Jones, Dante Moncrief, A.J. Green. I don't know. And you know, none of these guys are going to play, and so you got crushed here. Something could happen. But all in all, I don't want to start anybody on the Jets other than Powell.
Yeah, a friend of mine had the Julio Jones conundrum last week, as did many people, with the 4 o'clock start. And he was talking about starting somebody at 1 or should just wait it out, see if Julio gets out there. And I had Robbie Anderson as my emergency player. I said, I think you got to go with the Anderson route and just wait out the Julio news, even though none of us expected good news. And it worked out, and it probably worked out for a few other people as well. On the Miami side of things, obviously things have changed dramatically with the Ryan Tannehill injury. While it's not as serious as anticipated, we got Matt Moore in there. So what do we think here from a Jay Ajayi going up against this tough defensive front for the Jets, which is still, on the whole this season, they've still held up well against the run. So what are your thoughts on Jay Ajayi and some of these receivers? I think I speculated with Tony on Sunday night that Devontae Parker was probably going to see the biggest hit from this quarterback change. So give me your thoughts on the Miami offense.
Are they still the Jets, are they still a tough run defense? Weren't last week.
They weren't. That's true.
I wonder if they've checked out.
It's possible.
You know, you do wonder about that as we get late in the season. You know, players check out. They're looking forward to the offseason, looking forward to going golf and going on vacation, getting into the warm weather. And as I said earlier, tonight's not going to be a fun night to play in. It won't be brutally cold. I think it'll be somewhere in the high 30s, low 40s. But it's going to be rainy. You know, and sometimes guys, it's just a paycheck now. That's all they're trying to do and try not to really embarrass themselves more than anything else. I'm not really all that worried about Ajayi. I'm starting him. I'm not saying he's going to get 200 yards. I'm not expecting a huge game here. But I think the game plan is focused around him. Right? So I think that's all I need. The opportunity is going to be there. Matt Moore is a pretty good backup quarterback. And this is not some schlep, some rookie that he's not going to be able to do anything about. I think he's had a 13-12 record as a starter,
yeah,
which for Miami is kind of impressive when you look at where they've been over the past decade. So I'm not all that worried about Matt Moore, but I agree with you. I think Parker and Stills probably do take the biggest hit, but not a huge hit. But they were borderline starts anyway.
Yeah.
You know, where the Jets secondary is beatable. So that's where you go. It really comes down to who else you go. You're putting these guys up against. Yeah. They're both flex plays for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair to highlight that Matt Moore is not your. It's not the backup that some other teams are putting out there. Like, you know, when Pittsburgh, when Ben is out and Landry Jones comes in, you got problems. If Eli were to ever get hurt and Ryan Nassib has to come in, you got real problems. But with Matt Moore, the drop-off from Tannehill to Matt Moore, there is some drop-off, obviously, but it's not as considerable as it is on other teams. So Matt Moore, a veteran guy, hopefully comes in here, and Jarvis Landry owners might be happy about this move because he might see that same number of targets that he's seen and possibly even a little bit more if they can't get the downfield passing game working. So, you know, I had this conundrum, Ajay versus DeMarco Murray. Who would you go with there? It's a half point PPR.
Ooh, that is a nice conundrum.
And I had Rawls in the other night. I chose him over both of them. So that's locked in. I can only play one more guy in the flex.
I would have as well, so I can't knock you for that choice. No Derek Johnson for KC, so you can run. We saw how they changed last week, right? The Thursday night game for Oakland. As soon as Johnson went out, all of a sudden, Latavius Murray had much more running room. Now KC will try and fix that problem. They've had 10 days to work on it, so I don't think it'll be as big. But Murray, Ajay, Murray, that's a tough one. I'm gonna go Ajay. KC still has something to play for. They're the better defense. I'll go Ajay over Murray.
In this crappy weather, George, it's just like there's just another thing to think about. But, you know,
isn't that good for the running back?
It could be. It could be. And the number of touches.
It's not going to be the downpour it was in Miami last week.
Yeah, true. It's a tough one, though. It's one I've been thinking about all week. And, you
can go either way, Mike. If you want to go Murray, I certainly wouldn't knock you.
Yeah.
Murray is he's had a great season. But it's sort of brutally cold in KC tomorrow, too. Not like it's going to be in Chicago, but it's pretty damn cold.
Yeah, well, the next game we'll talk about is not a team that you think I would talk about right off the top, but we got the Niners going into Atlanta. Atlanta, it's a 50.5 total. It's the highest one on the slate, and the Falcons have the highest team total on the slate with a 33 expected team total. So we got Julio issues. We got Mohamed Sanu issues, but the Niners can't stop anybody, and they certainly can't stop the running backs, of which the Falcons have two. Matty Ice, probably everybody's consensus. It's really the consensus number one quarterback this week in fantasy. He's got a cake matchup, but they could run all day on the Niners like Bilal Powell did last week. So give me your thoughts here. First at the wide receiver position, which is the trickier part, and then how you see both running backs lining up for Atlanta.
Well, you named the problem already. I mean, I said there's a couple of problems here. What if this game is 24-0 halfway through the second quarter? Or 24-3? That wouldn't shock me. So maybe Ryan doesn't throw a whole bunch in the second half here. They could run with Freeman and Coleman all day. They're not going to need to put the ball in the air 35 times, and I don't think they will. That being said, still start Ryan. I want to start Gabriel. Love Gabriel. I think he's going to have a nice game tomorrow. I think Scott Engel said he had him at number 10, or maybe number 12 when we talked yesterday. I think it's a little high. I don't have him as a wide receiver one, but I think I had him at 15. So, it's apples. You're splitting hairs there. Not a big deal. Sanu, I'd be a little bit more cautious about. Has the groin injury. Same thing. If they get up big, maybe they take him out. He doesn't play as many snaps. Why risk that groin? I think the Falcons are so smart and deactivating Julio Jones. You deactivated him last week. You blew out the Rams. You deactivate him this week. You're going to blow out the 49ers. Get him healthy for the stretch run in the playoffs. I don't think we see enough teams do this when you know you're going to win the game. Coaches always find a reason. Well, you know, there's this 2.8% chance that we could lose the game. I better put Julio Jones in there. You know, then all of a sudden, he re-injures the groin, the hamstring never gets healthy. The toe never gets healthy, and he has problems all season long. So kudos to the Falcons for doing this. And for fantasy owners, I know we want Julio Jones in there, but at least they announced it 2 days ahead of time. You have time now to make your moves.
Yeah, I don't want him in there. I don't want him in there, right?
Right. I agree. I agree with you. If I was a Julio Jones owner, I don't have to worry about him being a decoy now. I don't have to worry about him playing four plays and coming out of the game. I think this is nothing but good news. Yes, you lose Julio, but you have time now to move on, and you're not going to get screwed on Sunday.
Yeah, he's hurt. He is hurt. So you know this. He's out. There's no decoy, no nonsense, and you hope and pray that you get him next week for the championship game. If not, then it's ultimately a huge fantasy loss. But At least he's not putting you in the position where you don't know whether or not to play him. You can't play him. He's out. You move on. As far as the running backs are concerned, I think you hit on it. I think they're both viable. In fact, I could see this being Tevin Coleman's best game of the year based on how this week could, like, the expected game flow. They could be up, as you said. They don't necessarily have to have Freeman in for the whole game. They let Coleman do a little bit of mop-up duty. He obviously gets goal line carries, so I could see this being a really good game for Tevin Coleman. I have him in our Josby Pros League, and I'm happily playing him and hoping for the best because Todd Gurley did not show up the other night. On the Niners side, thoughts here. Do you think Hyde can keep it going against an Atlanta defense that, as you said earlier, is pretty spotty?
Sure, I'm on board with Hyde. Running back 2 for me. I think he'll be good. He's really their biggest offensive weapon. The only two people I consider starting are Hyde and Kaepernick. Could be a low-end quarterback 1, high-end quarterback 2, depending on who your starter is. Maybe you want to put Cap in there over Dak Prescott. I'm good with that. Yeah, I think Kaepernick has been it was lousy in week 13, week 14, a little better. I think he does okay tomorrow. Fast track, indoors, it's Atlanta. They're going to have to throw a bunch because they're going to be behind.
Very true. So we'll continue to break down games all throughout the morning. Like I said, Gary Davenport from Fantasy Sharks coming up at 9 a.m. We're going to talk Raiders, Chargers next, Bucks, Cowboys, Steelers, Bengals, and all the games through the rest of the slate. It's Mike and George taking you all the way till 10 o'clock. Slow Jams. The Slow Jam segment. For some reason, every Saturday at 8:30, we play Slow Jams. This is how we do it. Take it down a notch. Maybe we got you fired up over the first half an hour, but here we are. We're going to talk a little bit more. So we should probably go to like a West Coast vibe. It's a little bit more laid back. And we will do that. Saints are at the Cardinals. It's a 50.5 total, tying the Niners Falcons for the highest total on the slate. So George, a lot here, obviously, for fantasy relevance purposes. Saints always impactful, and David Johnson going up against a defense that can't really stop anybody. They've been better than in years past, but we all know the Saints are somebody that he can run on, and frankly, David Johnson can run on anybody. What's been a little bit perplexing was the Cardinals' receiving core, which has come a little bit more into focus with Michael Floyd being released. J.J. Nelson's going to get regular snaps. So give me a little bit on the Saints here. Who are you shading towards? A little bit tougher for Ingram, but maybe a little bit easier for some of the receivers?
I don't know about a little bit easier. I mean, I'm starting Cooks, all right? I'm not all of that panicking about him. Drew Brees has been lousy of late. The yardage is there, but he's throwing a lot of interceptions. 6 interceptions his past 2 games.
No touchdowns.
It's a surprise with Drew Brees. No touchdowns. I guess you could say that can be spotty, you know, more of a, but still, something's off there. If you watch his games, he just doesn't look right. Not sure what it is. Michael Thomas looks like he's going to play. He does not have an injury designation anymore, so that's good news there. I expect Michael Thomas to see more of Patrick Peterson, not Brandon Cooks. So, once again, that should be good news for Cooks as well. I'm going to start Thomas. I don't know if I can have better on my roster. I'm starting Cooks mainly for the same reason. Snead becomes more, I could see not starting Snead. Ingram scares the life out of me.
Yeah, it's been terrible.
Starting him. Right, and he's very inconsistent. And now you're playing the Cardinals, good defense in Arizona. I'd like to stay away if I can. Once again, someone just asked me a question in the RX email answer queue. They had Freeman and Ajayi. Okay, you can stay away from Ingram, no problem. I don't know if other owners have those options. So that's the issue there. I don't want to go down too far on my list and sit Ingram, but I'm not looking to start him tomorrow.
Right. So on the Arizona side, Michael Floyd released. J.J. Nelson going to be even a more regular part of this offense, if that's possible. He's obviously had some impactful games here. Larry Fitzgerald, we all know what we're getting out of him. David Johnson, we don't really have to talk about. He's, along with Le'Veon Bell, the top-ranked running backs for the week, and that's both in season-long and DFS, despite the fact that you're paying up. You need to pay up for those guys this week. So some thoughts here on Palmer being a little bit of a sneakier play, who's been inconsistent, but Palmer, and give me some thoughts on the receivers.
All right, Palmer is somewhat of a sneaky play. Once again, the quarterback we're going to bring up a lot is Dak Prescott, and I would start Palmer over Prescott. Now, if you're in a league that gives heavy to, you know, it takes away points, heavy for turnovers, you want to be cautious here because Palmer's a turnover machine, but New Orleans isn't exactly a turnover defense. So I think you want to keep that in mind as well. So I think Palmer is in my – he is in my top 12, so he is startable, yes. As for the receivers, I mean, you met David Johnson's a starter, so we don't need to worry about him. He's an ace. Fitzgerald has been quiet of late, but I can't see how you're sitting him here. So he goes, J.J. Nelson is somewhat of a gamble now that he's the clear-cut number two. You know, no Michael Floyd, I don't think John Brown's playing either. So he's the clear-cut number two. But the New Orleans defense has been better of probably over the past month. They have not been the sieve they were earlier this season. So J.J. Nelson, he gets some love. You know, I'll think about him when he's sort of in that Willie Snead category. He's not an automatic start. Depends on what else is on my roster. I'm not shying away from him. You know, but I'm not automatically putting him in my lineup either. I think he's in that low-end wide receiver three flex category.
So I'm going to drop a stat right now. I want to see if you know. I'm sure you're dialed in, but I want people to understand the kind of season that Larry Fitzgerald is having this year. And, George, I famously, well, not everybody would know this, I had a little bit of a preseason rant about Larry Fitzgerald this year and how people were undervaluing him as compared to, say, John Brown and Michael Floyd. What do you think Larry Fitzgerald's numbers are this year right now?
What do I think they are?
Receptions, yardage, touchdowns. What do you think he's got right now?
Off the top of your head. 13,
yeah.
13 games into the season, so yeah. Again, times by five. I'll say he's got about 68 catches, 900 yards, and six touchdowns. How about that?
You're really close on two of them, but he's got 91 catches already.
Damn.
Yeah, exactly. 91 catches for 892 and five scores. You almost nailed the last two, but he's at 130 targets this year, 91 catches. For those of you in PPR leagues, it doesn't always look sexy, but I'm telling you, this guy's knocking out double-digit games each and every week, and this is coming off a slow month. People will point to last week and say, well, what happened against Miami? 3-for-12. I get it. It was a dud of a game. It's his worst game of the year. Before that, 10 for 78, 4 for 53, 6 for 63. Now, the problem is he hasn't gotten in the end zone since week 5. That speaks more to the inconsistency in the offense than anything. But he does see targets each and every week in a big way. I know it's been a slow month, but I'm just telling you, Larry Fitzgerald, on the whole, has had a really good year. And he could clear 100 catches by tomorrow. So that's with 2 weeks to play. So that's it for Saints Cardinals. Moving on to Raiders at Chargers. A lot going on here. Melvin Gordon.
The Raiders.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon as good as out. I don't think it's been officially declared yet, George, but we have this Kenneth Farrow, who is probably the top waiver wire pickup this week, assuming that Bilal Powell was picked up in your leagues. Kenneth Farrow with Ronnie Hillman now being activated. It probably decreases his upside some, but we would expect Farrow to be the lead back here, correct?
Yeah, I don't think there's any other choice, right? So, yes, I expect Farrow, and he's a guessing game. No one really – the Raiders are decent against the run. No one really knows what Farrow's going to bring to the table here. You're on your third-string running back now, right? No Gordon, no Woodhead, you're down to Farrow. I also wonder this. Suppose the Raiders score. You know, they score 10, 14 quick points. Suppose Farrow doesn't look good in the early going. Do they just abandon the run and let Phillip Rivers throw it 45 times? Would this really surprise anybody?
No.
So I don't think Farrow, you know, it's not like Gordon where, oh, you know, the first 6-8 carries don't go well. They're still going to feed him. They may not do that with Farrow. What if they're behind? You know, once again, the score's getting out of hand. It could be a throwing game here. So I think you want to be very careful with Farrow. That being said, he's still an RB2.
Yeah, and the reason I brought up the Ronnie Hillman thing, for those who don't realize, Ronnie Hillman was inactive last week. So when Gordon went down, there's really only one guy to get the ball, which is why you saw the sheer number of touches that Farrow saw, which is 21 or 22 touches. But Hillman could take a little bit of that, but he's the lead back there. As you said, I mean, the Chargers aren't going to really be able to stop the Raiders in a significant way. So I think Phil Rivers is going to put the ball up. I can tell you as a Phil Rivers owner, it hasn't been pretty. I can't really put it on him because the guy's been really gutting it out in a very depleted team, but he's turning the ball over a ton. So even when he puts up a few touchdowns, he's turning the ball over. He's fumbled a bunch of times, throwing picks. So you have to keep that in mind. It's limited his upside in recent weeks. But Tyrell Williams in this situation, you like him against the Raiders?
Yes. I think I don't see how you can sit Ty Williams. He's been great. He's going to score some touchdowns. I think there's a shootout. This game wouldn't shock me if it's, you know, 34-28, 34-20, somewhere around there. And I think Williams does get the end zone. I like Dontrell Inman as well.
Yep.
He's a lower-end wide receiver, where Williams I would have as a high-end wide receiver two. Inman's more of a low-end wide receiver three, but he's very playable. I think points are going to come on the board. I think they're going to be in the passing game for San Diego. Gates, I have as a high-end tight end. You know, he's in my top half. I think I have him at 7 overall offhand. I think points are coming on the board here. Phillip Rivers is also a starter here. I would start Rivers over guys like Winston, Dak Prescott, without much of a worry here. And I might even go, I don't think you'll have this choice because Rivers wasn't really drafted as a backup. But there are a couple of quarterbacks. When you talk about Drew Brees, I don't trust him. There are a couple other quarterbacks I'm not going to trust this week either. And Andrew Luck's going to be one of them when we talk about him.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. I had a couple of questions this week about Luck versus Carr. Despite the fact that Luck's numbers kind of add up over the season, I lean towards Carr because of what you just said about this game potentially being a shootout. I could see the ball being in the air all day long. Granted, Latavius Murray in most instances is going to be a starting back, and you're going to have to put him out there. But keep in mind what George said. I think the Chargers are just going to keep throwing it all day. This could be a 50-attempt kind of game for Phil Rivers. So we'll get back to some more games after the break. But do you enjoy news but hate reading? Then the Fantasy News Desk, sponsored by the Daily News, is for you. Plug in and zone out as all the day's top fantasy sports headlines and stories are relayed to you by our experts, Tony Sincotta and Greg Sussman. Join us on air at 6 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2:30 p.m., or listen at your own convenience by visiting us on demand at fntsy.com/radio or downloading the Fantasy News Desk on iTunes. Everything you need to know to win, only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and George, Roto Experts in the Morning, back in a few. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blute and George Kurtz will be here till 10. Gary Davenport from Fantasy Sharks coming up in about 15 minutes. If you just want to win your fantasy league and not worry about your stacks or GPPs or contrarian plays, then Old School Fantasy is the show for you. Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Famer Scott Engel, who I hung out with last night, met his son, beautiful gentleman, beautiful pair of gentlemen there. And award-nominated writer George Kurtz and Jake Seeley give you all you need to know to coolly run roughshod through season-long leagues. The fun begins at 1 p.m. Eastern every weekday. Old School Fantasy only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, on demand at fntsy.com/radio. Or available for download on iTunes. George, last night at the Christmas party, we missed you. I'm sorry you couldn't make it. I know it's a long way for you to go there and back. I had to leave early, obviously, because you're doing this show. But there was a lot of ugly sweaters there. There was like a competition, but not one. I don't know if they were supposed to be a competition or if they're giving out prizes. But producer Chris Pavona came in with one. Jake Seeley came in with one. I think Nando's sweater was actually supposed to be just a fashion statement, but he probably could have competed also for ugly sweater competition. So it was one of those situations where I didn't want to ask. You know what I mean?
I have a funny feeling Nando would be more than happy with saying his. Whether he was in the contest or not, I think he was more than happy with his fashion choice.
Yeah. So his beard is getting huge now, by the way. He looks like UConn Cornelius, which he was being called regularly last night. It's quite a sight. It's really getting bushy. It's getting like, UConn Cornelius style for those Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer fans. In any event, good party last night. Good vibes. Our leaders, Len Asper, Lou Mayone, gave impassioned speeches and were taking over the world in the next couple of years. So that's all good stuff. But a lot of ugly sweaters there. I'm trying to think who else had one. Those were the ones that stood out. Jake's, I couldn't even figure Jake's out. I didn't get a chance to talk to him about it, but it was weird. There was an American flag on it. It looked like Santa was planting the American flag on it. It was just a very odd sweater choice, but maybe we got some pictures. We'll put those up on social media over the coming days and ahead as we head towards Christmas and are in the throes of Hanukkah now, I believe. Is that right? I don't know. I don't keep track.
I'm looking on a calendar now that you will.
It's got to be Hanukkah already. It's the 17th. So it's usually. I might have missed
it. You're lucky I know when it's Christmas.
Yeah, I know.
Hanukkah begins at sundown. Actually, Hanukkah begins on same day this year, 24th.
Oh, really? It seems kind of late.
Yep.
Anyway, happy Hanukkah, happy holidays, and Merry Christmas to everybody as we head towards it next week. We will be here next week doing the show. Keep in mind, and we got a full slate next week that's on Saturday, so keep that in mind as well. Only a couple of Christmas Day games, which my Steelers, which we're going to talk about right now, are playing in. So the Steelers today or tomorrow, are playing the Bengals. And we saw Le'Veon Bell explode one of the biggest games of the year, one of the biggest fantasy games in recent memory, a 50-point performance in many leagues, just dominant. And I couldn't be happier that the Steelers have him and he's healthy. Obviously, when the big three are healthy, Ben, Bell, and Brown, they're a very tough team to beat. They go into Cincinnati today, and these are really all must-wins for them. They have three divisional games in a row with the Bengals, Ravens, and Browns in a row, and they have the Bengals today. So thoughts there for maybe the passing game more so than Le'Veon Bell, because we expect him to get his 30 touches, which he's been averaging over the last month.
Yeah, well, Bell and Brown are always must-starts, so there's really very little reason to talk about them. The Pittsburgh offense is a different animal on the road.
Yep.
It's just not as explosive. It's just not as good for whatever reason that is. A lot of teams are like that. Pittsburgh seems to be closer to where it's just hard to figure out why. You know, so it's a rivalry game. These two teams do not like each other. We all remember what happened in the playoffs last year, where Perfect, hit Antonio Brown, put him out for the championship game. Let's face it, Brown's healthy. Maybe it's Pittsburgh winning that Super Bowl and not the Denver Broncos. So anyway. Roethlisberger, he's still a top 10 quarterback for me, but I have some concerns. I'm not expecting a monster game or anything like that. The only other player I think worth talking about is Ladarius Green.
That's right.
And it's same situation. You know, I think he's a low. He's in that 8-14 range or 8-12 range. So yes, he's a starter, but I'm not expecting the game he had versus the Giants 2 weeks ago. You know, I think he'll get a nice effort here. Cincinnati does not do a good job against the tight ends, so that helps out there. But like I said, I'm just not expecting a monster game from anybody other than Brown and Bell.
Yeah, I mean, last week, Ladarius Green comes off the Giants game, 6-for-110 and a score, and he goes up against the Bills. He goes 2-for-25. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell got the ball 40 times in that game, so there wasn't too many plays to go around. But, of three of the four games in which he's caught a pass, they've been kind of dud games. 2-for-67 against Indy is really just one big play, and 3-for-30 against Dallas. So you're rolling the dice a little bit. DFS, he's low priced, so you can get a little bit of value there. But in your season long leagues, it's a risk. You can't guarantee too much other than Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. So I need that win. Steelers are currently sitting at 8-5, George, and I need them to get to 11 to cover my seasonal competition for over-unders. I'm in a tough spot. I need the Texans to win 2 of 3 and the Steelers to win all 3 to try to minimize the impact of my loss. It looks like my buddy's going to edge us out, but I have a chance to go 4-1 on the year, and I need the Steelers to win it out. What do you think?
Well, you know they're beating Browns in Week 17, assuming the game means something.
Yeah.
So you need to know. Oh, that'd be so ironic if the Browns knock them out. But need to win the next two. You know, it's tough. Divisional games. At Cincinnati, and you got Baltimore. I want Pittsburgh to win because I have, in my points league, I have Ben Roethlisberger, so and the playoffs count, so I need Pittsburgh to get in. But I'm going to say no. I don't think they can win all three. It means what, about a 5-6 game winning streak?
You said the playoffs count? Like the NFL playoffs?
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a points league, playoffs count. So,
it behooves you to pick players on better teams, too, when you're doing the drafting.
Not really during the draft, but at the trade deadline, that's when that comes into play.
Got it. Okay, cool. So, Bucks, Cowboys. We got a couple of minutes, so we can do Bucks, Cowboys real quick. Zeke Elliott, don't think we need to talk about much there, but how about the Cowboys passing game? Cole Beasley going to do anything here? Or are you worried about Dak's ability to throw against a Bucks team that earlier in the year seemed like you were going to be able to throw on all day, but it's flip-flopped a little bit easier to run on them in recent weeks and a little tougher to throw on. So your thoughts there about the Dallas passing game?
Yeah, I mean, Dak needs to make the adjustments. That's what we're seeing now. And also the coaching staff needs to run better routes in these wide receivers. I think what you're seeing now is teams do not respect the deep ball at all, so they're clogging the middle. You know, sorry to take away. They understand Elliott's going to get his yardage. You're not going to stop him. But you want to stop the game-breaking plays, the 80-yard runs. That's what you want to keep in check here. That's what teams are doing here. And Dak's not making the plays. He's not making the right reads. You know, I said this many times during the week. You know, you really need to see the coaches' tape, the old 22, to see if Dak's missing open receivers. You know, why he's not getting the ball to the guys. And, and he is somewhat, but the receivers aren't getting open quick enough either. So there is some problems there with Dak. He has to make those adjustments. You mentioned Tampa Bay. You're absolutely right. They've turned that defense around. You know, first half of the season, you could throw on them all day. Now you can't. You know, so it becomes more interesting there. Dallas defense is also playing better. And, you know, Buccaneers are really, it's all about Mike Evans. And you can take him out or at least slow him down. Sort of the same with Ezekiel Elliott. If you could take him out of the game or slow him down, the Bucs can't move the ball. They don't have enough. Martin has been okay. Cameron Brate, nice, but he's a good tight end. He's not Rob Gronkowski, who's going to control the game all by himself. I think this game will be moderately, 21-17, 24-21, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Evans leading the league in targets. But the last 2 weeks against San Diego and New Orleans, two teams that you can really take advantage of, he's got a combined 77 catches for 80 yards. So nothing crazy there. He hasn't gotten the end zone in a few weeks. And we'll see what he can do here. I do think he can take advantage of Dallas. But as you said, George, it's really all going to be focused on him. Do you really expect big games out of Doug Martin or Jameis? I don't really see it. Dallas can certainly be had defensively. But, you know, you see Jameis's rankings. He's sort of in the QB1, QB2 conversation. Maybe low-end QB1 in a 12-team league or 14-team league. So we'll see how that plays out. It's a surprisingly big game. I think a few weeks ago you wouldn't have expected it, but a huge game, huge playoff implications here for an 8-5 and 11-2 team. So that's the first hour down. We got Gary Davenport from Fantasy Sharks coming up in a few minutes. We're going to talk IDPs. We're going to talk defense. We're going to talk about the Rams coaching search. I want to see what his thoughts are. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We'll be back in a few for our final hour.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning, and this is the Saturday edition with Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Got another hour left, plenty to talk about. We got Gary Davenport coming up here in a minute. But, it's a white Christmas, George. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I got good vibes. I know I don't want to shovel. You don't want to shovel. But when it's Christmas time, we got a little bit of snow. It adds a little bit of juice to it, no?
Well, the snow has stopped here. I'm happy to report. Coram, New York, the snow has stopped. Now I just need rain. Can I have some rain?
Yeah, you just want it to wash away. But then you got to shovel slush, dude. Then it's even heavier. So maybe you just get out.
I have a snowblower anyway. I don't know what I'm complaining about.
That's true. Yeah, you got to do it. It's just sort of par for the course. Once I moved to the suburbs, I bought a snowblower, and I was officially a suburbanite. It's not the most fun thing in the world. They don't always work as easily as you want them to, but it's just, you know, it beats the heck out of what I did the first year that I lived in the suburbs when my snowblower broke. And I started shoveling because it was a couple of years ago when we had those huge blizzards. I'd go out in the morning, I'd shovel. I ended up like I had to go to physical therapy for my shoulder. It was like it was the ultimate sign that I had gotten old, that I hurt myself shoveling. It was a depressing moment, but it actually happened. Any shoveling injuries for you over the course of your career? Your shoveling career?
I mean, other than the back being sore, certainly that happens. Hey. Listen, my 21-year-old niece lives with me. She's out here too shoveling. You live here. You shovel. Grab a shovel and get out there.
That's right. That's right.
Although my wife doesn't quite believe that.
My wife doesn't know where to keep the snow shovel. My wife doesn't know where that stuff is. Like, she doesn't know how to start the snowblower. She doesn't know really where to keep the shovels. By the way, they're in the garage, if you're listening. They just are in the garage where they always are. So... is what it is. So we got Gary coming up here in a minute. Don't have him just yet. We do have him. So Gary Davenport, are you there, my friend?
I am, sir.
Good. So my first question to you, Thursday Night Football continues to be a disappointment. Obviously, that wasn't pretty to watch. By the way, the Rams almost covered at the end of that game for all you gamblers out there. That was a heck of a gambler's moment. It was a 16.5-point spread, which they pulled off, but the Rams are thrown into the end zone there. That would have been really depressing. A team that bad would have covered that spread. In any event, as I digress, what are your thoughts? George gave his earlier. What are your thoughts on this potential Rams coaching search now that Jeff Fisher is out?
They're going to, you know, spend a lot of time chasing after the so-called big names and the splash hires and everything. I almost think they'd be best to find a nice, hungry, young assistant. You know, look at the success that a guy like Adam Gase is having with the Miami Dolphins this year. You know, get, don't sift through the search. I fear that at the end of the search, we're going to get some same old name, and the Rams are just going to be stuck in neutral as a franchise, the same way they've been the last 4 or 5 years with Jeff Fisher under center. I don't understand why. The only thing Jeff Fisher managed to do with any success while he was the head coach of the Los Angeles, St. Louis Rams, whatever, was beat the Seattle Seahawks. So you fire him just before you play the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fair point. And I'm with you. I'm in lockstep in that trying to go for the splash hire or the big hire doesn't seem like the right move to me. I think you want, I think you want somebody in there that has a chance to develop Goff in the way that he needs to be developed. I think Adam Gase is a perfect point because he's the type of guy that I want. Now, it's disappointing that Josh McDaniels comes out and says, I don't really want to do this. I'm focused on what I'm doing here. Now, that is a big drop-off, right? So the most streamlined, successful organization in the NFL, I need to be going to sort of a dysfunctional mess. But frankly, that's why people get hired, right? There's something wrong at the one at the place you're going to. You're coming in there to fix it. So I can understand him not wanting to make that big leap, but I think it would be a unique opportunity if you have some belief in Goff. Now, if you're a guy that evaluates quarterbacks and you go through the tape and you're like, Goff stinks, I don't know why they picked him number one, that's a different story. But I think some of those rumors are a little bit overblown as far as Goff's, people thinking that Goff isn't the right guy. In any event, yeah, so that's a little bit on the Rams. We'll continue to monitor that, obviously, as they slide towards what looks like just a 4-win season. So, that being said, Gary, how are you doing in your playoffs, and how many teams you got left? You feeling good about anybody that's left in your roster of teams?
Yeah, I've got a couple teams that did pretty well this season. I've got one IDP-only team that I think went 12-2 for the season in that league. I'm going for my fourth straight championship. Couple standard fantasy leagues where there was one where I went, I believe, 12-1, and another one where I went 11-2. No undefeated seasons, which is fine because I've never had an undefeated season and actually won the championship. I run the table, and every time it happens, I get beat in the playoffs, so I actually feel a little bit better. I might have made the playoffs on a little bit lower percentage of my leagues than usual, but I think I feel better about the teams I have left than I would most years, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so to the listeners, Gary, George, and I are in this 32-team Dynasty IDP League. I've won it a couple of times. Gary's probably been more successful than me as far as points are concerned. He just keeps getting, run into bad luck in the playoffs. And guess who's left? Not me, not Gary, but George. George, what's going on, buddy? I thought this was a rebuild year, and here you are in the conference finals. You're going for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, so far so good here, but I think I'm going to get my backside handed to me this week. It's rare that I look at another team's roster, but I did this week, and my God, am I going up against like God's team.
That's crazy. In a 16-team conference, for a guy to have running backs of Le'Veon Bell, LeGarrette Blount, and DeMarco Murray, I don't even know when he pulled this off, but now it looks unbeatable. So we'll see. George is going to need a little bit of luck there. So, Gary, give me your thoughts first your IDP Studs and Duds article, which I like to go over every week. Your start of the week is Eric Kendricks from the Minnesota Vikings. Probably not a guy that you've seen in this spot too much this year. A lot of good players on that defense, but Eric Kendricks is front and center this week against the Colts.
Yeah, he's been a little nicked up at times this year. When he did get back into the lineup, was coming off the field a little bit more than you might like to see from a stud linebacker. But the Colts have just been, they've been at the top of the league in fantasy points allowed to the linebacker position for most of the season. They've just consistently given up good scores to linebackers. That's why I have Kendricks in there. Conversely, I like Edwin Jackson of the Colts this week, too, going Minnesota's. If they're not still in the top five in fantasy points allowed to linebackers, I know they're still in the top 10. And with DeQuell Jackson out, Edwin Jackson has moved into an every down role for the Colts team. He had 10 tackles last week. Granted, only three were solos. But still, anytime you see double digit stops, that makes you happy. So I look for both inside linebackers to have nice games this week in that game.
Gary, you know, I'm looking at the – I've been watching this for a couple of days now. The Green Bay-Chicago game tomorrow, at 1 o'clock, it's going to be 4 degrees. And it's going down as the game goes on. Do you change your rankings at all for this? I mean, the wind chill is going to be around minus 15, minus 20. How does this affect what you do both offensively and defensively?
Well, I don't know that it will affect me much as far as the linebackers go in that I already didn't like them anyway. And the Bears and Packers are both, I think, bottom five in fantasy points. The Packers are dead last. So I was already down on Nick Witkowski this weekend. You know, a guy like Morgan Burnett, I might look at him a little more skeptically given this weather. I mean, the Chicago passing game isn't exactly a dynamo to begin with. And it's not going to be easy for teams to move the football in that game. So, conversely, I mean, it's not necessarily going to affect the play count that much. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see guys have a fairly average game. It's just going to be a choppy affair. You're just, when you look at the end, the stat line might be okay, but it's going to be an ugly one to watch.
So, Gary, you're actually highlighting – interestingly, you're highlighting a couple of Steelers going up against the Bengals tomorrow, both Stephon Tuitt as well as Lawrence Timmons. As you wrote in the article, it's a typical season for Timmons. He's solid. He's not that spectacular, but you like him tomorrow. Why is that?
Bengals are a top five team in fantasy points allowed to linebackers, and they're trending up. They've just cracked the top five in the last couple of weeks. So they've been giving up some fat scores over these past few weeks. I think part of that is probably since Giovanni Bernard got hurt and Jeremy Hill became the full-time running back, you're seeing a little bit more between the tackles running, which is opening up a few more stops for the linebacker position. Bengals offensive line's been a problem for them all season long. They've given up some nice scores to defensive linemen is the reason I like Tuitt. I like Ryan Shazier, too, this weekend. I just didn't really feel a need to highlight him, so I picked him into Lawrence Timmons and Lawrence Timmons. He's not going to finish inside the top 10, but he's probably not going to finish outside the top 20 either. I mean, he's literally done that for the past 5-6 seasons.
Gary, let's talk about the Buccaneers. How have they turned around their, I guess, defensive season over the past couple of weeks? And specifically, Gerald McCoy and Levante David, what's their status for tomorrow?
Oh, I think both those guys are going to be a good. I mean, I can't imagine you're going to have to just tie him to the bench, keep him off the field. This is the biggest game the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have played in some time. Flexed into Sunday night football. Got to feel good for Tampa. I think a lot of it's that pass rush, the front four, has started getting more consistent pressure on the quarterback, and that's just opening things up for everybody else. It's going to be interesting. The thing I'll be watching for tomorrow night, and it's hard for IDP owners because with it being a Sunday night game and not knowing going in, it's hard to start either guy. Chris Connie and Keith Tandy have both, when they were in the starting lineup, put up good scores at strong safety for the Buccaneers. But I'm not sure which guy's going to start tomorrow, and I'm not sure even if Tandy starts or Connie starts that we're not going to see the other guy. And I believe that's what the Buccaneers have more or less inferred that they're going to do, is we might see a little bit of a carousel at the strong safety position, which is just a killer. The same thing's happening in San Diego with inside linebackers with Jatavis Brown and Corey Toomer. Now they're rotating, which just sucks the value out of both of them.
So, you know, speaking of this game, Gary, and it's something that George and I talked about earlier in the show. The NFC, the NFL in general, but the NFC in particular, it's really kind of hard to put your finger on maybe who the best team is. Dallas currently sitting with the best record, but we've seen a little bit of a choppy play these last couple of weeks. They're not as efficient offensively. Seattle, listen, they can't get anybody off the ball. They can't get Rawls going. That's been an inconsistent offense. And it had me thinking, like, what if the Bucs pulled off this game and they're 9-5 and they just beat Dallas in Dallas? Ultimately, I'm saying all this because who do you think is the best team in the NFC? And do the Bucs actually have a shot to claim it if they pull off this win tomorrow?
Yeah, I think they'd certainly have to enter the conversation that they're able to beat Dallas. I don't know that there is a best team in the NFC. I don't know that there is a team in the entire National Football League that I look at and I say, okay, that's a Super Bowl team. This is the year of the flawed football team. I mean, yes, the Patriots are the Patriots, but you look at the injuries that are starting to pile up for them, and you wonder if those are going to kick. The defending world champions might not even make the playoffs because they got quarterback issues like crazy. Oakland, I mean, they look choppy against Kansas City with Derek Carr, and all of a sudden they got the injured hand. And so on and so forth. Kansas City does everything well, but nothing fantastically. And you mentioned the problems with the NFC teams. It's the playoffs this year. I don't know that we're going to move into the wild card round and the divisional round with these clear favorites in our mind that these guys are going to be playing in Houston in the Super Bowl. It's going to be a true tournament, and it's going to be fun for fans to watch, even if it's very difficult for us to predict.
Yeah, I think you're 100%. We talked about this earlier in the show. It's a quagmire. I don't know who the best team in the NFC is anymore, and every week it changes anyway. But as for back to IDP, Joey Bosa, is he safe to start tomorrow?
Physically, I think he'll be fine. He'll probably play his regular complement of snaps, but from a matchup perspective, no. The Raiders are a terrible matchup. They've allowed 13 sacks in 13 games. Granted, Bosa had two when the Chargers and the Raiders played the first time this season. But banking on a guy bucking a matchup that bad, if he does, he's my defensive rookie of the year right there. That'll be enough for me to want to hand in the award. But no, I've got Bosa in one dynasty league, and he's going to be on my bench tomorrow.
Good stuff as always. Love talking IDP and football in general with Gary Davenport. He is from Fantasy Sharks. He's also a writer on Bleacher Report, so hit him up on Twitter at IDPSharks. Gary, we'll be here next week, but hopefully you get a little bit of a white Christmas like we're getting here in New York. So continue to have a good holiday season. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, you guys have a good one.
That was Gary Davenport of Fantasy Sharks and Bleacher Report. He's here every week at 9 a.m. George and I will be back in a couple of minutes to keep tearing through the rest of the games, keep you updated on projections and rankings and expectations for tomorrow. Mike and George back after this. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Roto Experts in the Morning. With Mike Blue and George Kurtz, and we're here for another 40 minutes or so. And coming up at 10 o'clock is College Game Day with Joe Lisi and Rich Sermonello. You think, well, the regular season's over. Why are they still doing College Game Day? Because it's bowl season, baby. It's that time of year. Got 40 bowls coming up. We're kicking it off today at 2 o'clock.
Maybe 39.
Say that again.
Maybe 39.
Yeah, exactly. So New Mexico plays Texas San Antonio and Albuquerque. That is the Gildan New Mexico Bowl, I believe. Yeah, that's what that is. And the sponsors and all that kind of stuff. Wait, why'd you say 39? Because of the Minnesota boycott?
Yeah, the Holiday Bowl, right? One's in trouble?
Yes. Honestly, I haven't even read that much into that, so that's my bad. But I know that the Minnesota players are boycotting based on a few things that have happened, suspended players and whatnot. Houston and the guys at 10 o'clock will keep you posted there whenever that game happens, although I think it's next week. So Houston actually plays San Diego State today in the Las Vegas Bowl. That's at 3:30. And then App State, Toledo, UCF plays Arkansas State. That's in Orlando, home game for UCF. And then Southern Mississippi plays Louisiana Lafayette in the New Orleans Bowl. So there's actually five games today kicking you off bowl season in a big way. Joe Lisi, Rich Sermonello will take you through all of that. Hung out with those guys last night at the Christmas party. Always good to see your fellow employees, fellow broadcasters in a festive setting. And it was that. So there was a lot of games going on, trivia. Greg Sussman and Nando DeFino were emceeing and running through all of that. I didn't get a chance to participate, George, because I had to leave early. Some people work in the mornings, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yeah. Like I said, I would have liked to have gone. I really would have liked to have gone. But for me, that'd be about a six-hour hike back and forth. And as you mentioned, you and I had to be here this morning.
Yeah, you're not really going to do that. You're going to hang out with, you know, Jake and Scott. You talk to those guys every day.
This is true. I don't need to see them.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, they're fine in person. They're fine. But you get a chance to talk to them 5 days a week, and you get plenty of time with them. But honestly, really good to see everybody. I'm just kidding around. So we'll continue to move through these games as we did earlier. Talk Bucks Cowboys. Titans Chiefs, actually kind of a big game on the slate. The Chiefs currently sitting at 10-3. And Titans sitting at 7-6, both really competing for their divisional championships with three games to go. I kind of need, you know, I need the Titans to lose in a big way for other reasons. But give me your thoughts on Titans Chiefs. We talked a little bit about DeMarco Murray earlier. Not our favorite matchup, but there's still an opportunity there for him based on his volume.
Yeah, I'm. Listen, we look at the Titans. I'm not worried about the running game. They'll run the ball. I really should have asked Gary Davenport who was going to take over Derek Johnson now that he's out, but I forgot. So I do think he can run on Kansas City. So Murray should be fine. Delanie Walker, Casey's pretty good against the tight ends, but I can't see you sitting him. All right, so you're starting Delanie Walker. It's after that where he gets dicey. You know, Marcus Mariota's not in my top 10. You know, it wasn't very good against Denver last week. Don't think he'll be all that much better against KC. KC is not Denver's pass defense, but they're a good, solid D. And it's going to be in KC. Hard place to play for visiting teams. And once again, the weather's supposed to be very cold, just like it was that Thursday night. So I think it'll be difficult for Tennessee to move the ball through the air on any kind of consistent basis, which means I don't want to start Rashad Matthews or Kendall Wright either.
Yeah, interestingly, in DFS, a couple of the highlights that our guys made at DailyRoto.com, you can go there for all the best DFS information. They like Alex Smith, particularly on DraftKings. They feel like he's cash viable because the Titans corners are suspect from a fantasy perspective, and they feel like Alex Smith could be a decent value. What are your thoughts about Alex Smith? He's always a tough guy to trust because you're worried about the ceiling being limited, but potential here for Alex Smith against a Titans defense that is good but and may be susceptible to the pass on the outside.
Well, I have to admit, I didn't think we'd be talking about Alex Smith, but yeah. I guess my question would be for you. Who are you starting him over?
It's a good question. I think Alex Smith is almost always becomes...
There's no buys this week.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not starting – I mentioned I'm worried about Breeze, Luck. I'm not starting over either one of those. I'm not starting over Ben because he's bad on the road. I'm not starting over Aaron Rodgers because I'm afraid of the cold tomorrow. So who are you starting him over? You know, Stafford? Okay. Let's say you have Smith as your backup for Stafford. I can see that. I am very worried about Matthew Stafford tomorrow. You can't tell me that this finger injury isn't going to be a problem. You know, oh, he's been throwing it fine in practice. Great. He's wearing a glove, and it's supposed to rain tomorrow in New York. I can't see that going well.
Even worse, George,
I don't know if I can make that
not
move,
just the
though.
Injury, but you made the point about the glove. He doesn't play with gloves. He's not going to be 100% comfortable with it right out of the gate. It's unlikely that in a game scenario. He wasn't comfortable last week after he put the glove on, and he's unlikely to be comfortable tomorrow.
Yeah, I said I can't see this going well. I've downgraded everybody on Detroit. Stafford, Golden Tate. That's pretty much is everybody. Ebron. I'm worried about all these. Marvin Jones is no longer in consideration there. So I'm worried about all these guys. So back to Smith, though. Could I see you starting Smith over Stafford? Wow. They're just not a passing team. That's the problem. The upside is so limited. Because what happened against Oakland last week. They got up big, and then that's it. They just milk it. Run game, defense. We're not going to put the ball in the air anymore. We're not going to let Smith make the big mistake. So it's just so hard. I'd probably still go Stafford there.
And do you like the Kansas City running scenario in this instance, though? It's a Titans defense that has been able to be fairly successful against the run.
No, I don't. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of questions about Spencer Ware, whether it be on Twitter, my chat on. By the way, I love that commercial we give that Mike Florio says. My chat hasn't been on Tuesdays in months. It's on Thursdays. but that's okay. Scott Engel was switched with me a long time ago. He does Tuesdays now. He couldn't do Thursday. But over the Roto Experts email answer queue, you know, I'm getting a lot of questions about Ware. And I've been able to sit him. Some people have really strong running backs here, which I'm surprised about. But I've been able to sit him. You know, for guys, you know, Powell's come out of nowhere now. So I could sit Spencer Ware outside of week 13. He hasn't done much in well over 2 months. He's been a very average running back. And I mean, average, maybe putting it nicely. So if I could sit Ware, yes, I'm sitting him.
Yeah, the only reason that Ware, you know, Ware was 14 carries for 29 yards, he just happened to get a score and a few catches. So, in any event, yeah, it's risky there. Rishard Matthews is actually a guy that they highlighted on Daily Roto as well as a nice cash value. Obviously, you're going to want to go with one of the potential high-priced wide receivers, Odell, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans. But Rishard Matthews could be an interesting value there going up against the Chiefs. Jeremy Maclin, they have as a solid, a possible tournament play. You know, he's just coming back. He's just getting healthy. I picked Jeremy Maclin back up in a league where I released him, and I have to make a big decision because in that league, it's an AJ Green league. We came in first place. We led the league in points. We were cruising along. AJ Green gets hurt, so it's Amari Cooper, and I have the choice between a Jeremy Maclin, a Randall Cobb, or Allen Robinson. So, what would you do there?
What were the names?
Maclin,
again?
Cobb, Allen Robinson.
How many can start? One?
Just one of those. I got Amari Cooper in the other spot. I'm not moving him.
God. Maclin, yeah, neither would I. Macklin's been, he's done nothing all season long. Allen Robinson's been invisible for a while. He's got, oh, man. And Cobb has got what's going to amount to a brutally, brutally cold game. This is tough. I'm probably going with Allen Robinson.
Yeah.
Not probably. I think I am going to go back to the well here with Allen Robinson. He's got Houston. They don't let up big numbers. He did have a decent first game against them. But it would be Cobb if the weather wasn't brutal. Yeah. But the weather is brutal, so I'm going Allen Robinson.
Maclin would be that roll of the dice for me, which I wonder after Thomas Rawls, you know, fell apart on fantasy-wise on Thursday night. I just wonder if Maclin I just take for a crazy upside play. It's a huge risk to take at this time of year, but sometimes those are the types of risks that win it. So that's it on Chiefs and Titans. Next game up on the slate, Pats at Broncos. Trevor Siemian, you know, hasn't been all that bad, George. It hasn't always looked pretty, and it's not the most efficient thing in the world, but I think Trevor Siemian has been better than some of us expected. Would you agree?
Would I agree? Sure. I'll agree with you.
Last two games out, 334 and a touchdown, 368 and three touchdowns. He didn't play against Jacksonville because he was banged up, concussion. But last two games out, pretty good. In fact, the two games before that, 258 and two scores, 283 and two scores. So the last four games he's played, we're looking at eight touchdowns and an average of, quick math, that's probably over 300 right there or close to it. So, I mean, that's actually pretty good. And going up against the Pats defense, which, you know, they do a very good job of targeting your number one threat. But unfortunately, the Broncos haven't been able to run the ball too much. So they might take out one of the receivers. You just don't know which one it's going to be, correct?
Yeah, I would say so. I think, you know, when it comes to Siemian, I have recommended him a couple of over people. Usually it's guys who give me the choices of Eli Manning, Stafford, Trevor Siemian, around that range of players. And in that case, yes, I can see it going with Trevor Siemian for the reason we're talking about. Mainly because Denver can't run the ball. Right? Booker, Forsett, I mean, unless you're getting Terrell Davis out of retirement, I don't think that's going to change. I don't know if it's all the running back's fault. I think the offensive line is pretty bad as well. So I expect the passing game to do well tomorrow. You know, I think they're going to have to throw the ball. Sanders, Thomas. I think Belichick knows this, so he's going to play the pass more than the run. You know, whether or not he can, I don't know if he's going to try and take Demaryius Thomas or Sanders out, or just try and, you know, make sure he's not going to have any eight-man boxes, keep his safeties high, prevent the big plays here. But, yes, I like Siemian somewhat, but the problem is going to be, I'm not going to see a 350-yard passing game tomorrow. I'm going to see a very average day. I think a good day for Siemian tomorrow is probably going to be in the 260-275 range and two touchdowns.
Which is okay. You know, that is, you know, if you're playing Trevor Siemian, that's about what your expectations could be. On the DFS side, our guys like Demaryius Thomas or Sanders, take your pick as a guy that to back off, to drop down off of those elite wide receivers in Odell, Brown, and Evans. Beyond that, LeGarrette Blount, can't say enough about the season he's having this year. 14 touchdowns. He's already over 1,000 yards. And he's just been doing it with opportunities, George. You look down the list of games this year, plenty of 20-touch games. Last week against Baltimore, the top run defense in the league, he goes for 18 for 72 and a score. The week before that, 18 for 88 in a score against L.A., which, you know, pretty stout run defense at times, as they proved the other night against Thomas Rawls. So, big LeGarrette Blount game here. Do you like Tom Brady to just try and air it out against this team? Obviously, the strength of Denver's defense is their ability to get a pass rush going. So what are your thoughts here for Tom Brady and the passing offense?
Well, how do you beat the Denver defense? By running the ball. So this is what I expect them to do. I think it'll be a heavy dose of LeGarrette Blount. Maybe a little flip-out passes to White and Lewis. I think that'll work. They're not going to forget about Tom Brady. But this is not a game where I want to start Mitchell, Hogan. I'm probably still starting Edelman. But even I don't expect big things out of him. I just don't think I could sit Edelman. So like I said, I think this is a game for the little guys. Not that Blunt's a little guy, but not the passing game. And the little White, Deion Lewis. I think Brady will post decent numbers here. But it's the game I'm expecting a 20-17 game. You know, it's going to be close. Every team is going to keep it close. Probably whichever team makes the least amount of mistakes. And when I say that, I probably mean Denver. Don't turn the ball over, Simeon. You know, you can't have those kind of game-breaking plays. That's what I'm expecting here. I think New England knows this. I think they're going to run the ball up the gut with LeGarrette Blount, pound it, and see if they can win this game in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I need Tom Brady in a massive way. I'm playing against he who shall not be named in our Joseph B. Pros League, and I had a dud from Todd Gurley, so I'm already in the hole. I need Brady in a big way. My other quarterbacks are Stafford, whom I ended up releasing. I just can't trust it the next 2 weeks. And Dak Prescott, whom I don't want to play over Tom Brady for obvious reasons. So that's where I'm at. Need a big game out of Brady. I'm sure many of you do, too. Edelman is what he is. Like George said, on the Denver side, I wish I could tell you which receiver is going to be the one to get a little bit of an easier break. But I can't say that I can predict that, whether it's Thomas or Sanders. If I had to pick one, I think I'd pick Sanders to play if I had to choose just one. But we'll see. They're both DFS viable. See how things go there. It's a big game, really, for the Broncos. They're going to need this one to stay in it. They're two games off the pace in the AFC West, and they really need this one. And for some of those other teams battling for the top spot in the AFC, they could use another Pats loss. We'll talk a few more games as we head towards 10 o'clock, towards College Game Day. Talk about Panthers, Washington, Eagles, Ravens after the break. But it's Mike and George. We've got a half an hour left, folks. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Mike and George. And if you're serious about daily fantasy sports, you don't need to be told how important information is an hour before lineups lock. If you're only semi-serious about DFS, then know this. The DFS Lineup Lock Show, sponsored by DailyRoto.com, is the most important tool in your kit for winning at DFS. From 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern, Tony Cincotta and Benny Riccardi will give you injuries, last-second lineup changes, and everything you need to know to win. DFS Lineup Lock with Tony Cincotta and Benny Riccardi only on Fantasy Sports Radio Network on demand at fntsy.com/radio or available for download on iTunes. Benny Riccardi was there last night at the Christmas party. He had like an Argyle vest situation going on, which could also probably be in the Nando DeFino camp of like, I think that's a real sweater. I don't think that's your ugly sweater, George, but I think it could qualify for both. But I actually liked Benny's look. I kind of liked the sweater vest look. It was fashionable. But some people said he kind of looked like a jockey. Because it was like an Argyle patterned. It was nice. I liked the way it looked. I'm just saying some people made that comment.
Some people, right. Well, yeah. No one's ever going to accuse me of being fashionable. I think I don't know if I have an ugly sweater. I could have worn a red sweater. Yeah, it looked like a matador.
Well, you know, you would have beaten out Cha-Cha, who showed up with a flat-billed Raiders cap and a Raiders T-shirt. So that was his holiday best. You know, there's people there wearing suits, like our CEO is wearing a suit because that's how he rolls. Cha-Cha, Raiders T-shirt, flat-billed Raiders cap. I don't even remember that. I remembered he was a Raiders fan. I hope he's a Raiders fan. Otherwise, that would be an odd choice.
Does this shock you?
No.
Are you really surprised?
He was the least shocking fashion choice of the evening. So, T-shirt and hat, he was good to go. But all in good fun. Everybody looked great. And Benny, I did like the sweater vest. I'm just saying, other people said, is that an ugly sweater? And I was like, no, I think that's a real sweater vest. He looks nice. Anyway, moving on to back to the games before Joe and Rich take over at 10 o'clock. Panthers at Washington on Monday night. We have a very high team total here for Washington of 29. Kirk Cousins, a DFS darling this week, along with Matty Ice, who we mentioned earlier. The Falcons with a 33-point team total. Washington with a 29-point team total. So going up against Cam Newton, who is a little bit of a pivot in tournaments for DFS. Do we expect a lot of points here on Monday night, George?
Yeah, I think we do. Here's the question. Who aren't you starting on Washington? I mean, really, you're starting Cousins. You're starting Rob Kelly, running back two. All three wide receivers are starter. Garcon in PPR league has been very good.
Yes.
You need to give him a little bit more love. He's been very good. You want to start Pierre Garcon, Jackson for the big play, Crowder starts. And Carolina can be beat through the air. They really can. So, like I said, I can't think of anybody I'm not starting until we start to think about Jordan Reed. How many fantasy teams did he send home last week? One catch on one target.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Ouch. I mean,
yeah, that's the antithesis of the Julio Jones scenario where we knew he was out. You play Jordan Reed because he's out there. You're going to play him one target. Does nothing. So, you know, you're right about Pierre Garcon. He's a guy that I really liked a lot during draft season. It's been a tough team to stick with, right? Because we have, it's been difficult to guess from week to week whether it's Garcon or if it's Crowder or if it's DeSean Jackson. But as you highlighted here, I mean, Garcon over the last, since week five, six catches for 77, a dud against Detroit, 2 for 22, but then 6 for 67, 6 for 81, 6 for 116 with a score, 4 for 43 against Dallas, 7 for 78 against Arizona, and 5 for 59 with a score against Philly. Obviously, the touchdowns are few and far between. He's only got 3 on the year, but in PPR, he's been a very consistent part of the offense. And, you know, he's a free agent at the end of the year. He may not be back, but he really has been a decent addition when, if you're in a league where you're playing 3-4 wide receivers, correct?
Yes, certainly. I would agree with you there.
Yeah, so... So beyond that, we expect Cousins to put the ball in the air a bunch. Obviously, the Panthers are still pretty banged up defensively, though they have gotten a couple of guys back. What are your thoughts about Rob Kelly in this game?
He's, like I said, he's a solid running back, too. You know, Carolina does, or at least their run defense is better than their pass defense. So he's probably going to need a touchdown to have a good game. That being said, we expect points to be scored here, so he gets that goal line carry. Yeah, I'm looking at a question in the queue right now. Kelly... or Hill, you know, Jeremy Hill. Okay, maybe I want to go Jeremy Hill there. A little better chance there for more rushing yardage there. And he's also the goal line back, so you get a little bonus there. So I can see going with Hill. I have no problems with Kelly. He's not Elliott, Bell, Johnson. He's not a game-breaking back. He's not going to get 160 yards. That's not going to happen. So if you want upside, you look someplace else. But for a solid running back, too, who's going to rush probably about 60, 70 yards, chance at a touchdown, I'll take that.
Yeah. Rob Kelly's helped people down the stretch. I know he had a dud of a game a couple of weeks back, but if you're sticking with him, he's been all right. But Cam Newton on the Carolina side of things, that passing game is a mess. Greg Olsen is really the only guy that you want to put out there. But I got to tell you, George, since week 9 in L.A. when he had 5 for 52 and a score, it's 5 for 39, 4 for 33, 4 for 45, 3 for 30, and 4 for 87. Unfortunately, that's not enough to get it done for a top-flight tight end, and a part of it is that Cam Newton's throwing at a 53% completion percentage clip.
Yeah, Cam has looked off. He's looked off for quite a while now. Is it Cam? Is it the offensive line? Is it because none of the receivers have truly stepped up? Kelvin Benjamin's really been blah. You know, Devin Funchess has been probably one of the bigger disappointments this season. Ted Ginn's been more useful, you know, but why Olsen hasn't been playing as well? It was good last week, so hopefully it turns around here. But I think it's more on Cam than it is on Olsen.
I think you mentioned the offensive line. I think that's a big part of it. But talking about Devin Funchess for a second, I mean, that's crazy because you and I thought he had an opportunity to, say, rise. A guy that was maybe outside of the wide receiver 3 conversation that had a real chance to push at a wide receiver 2. He's never had more than 3 catches in a game, and he's got 22 catches on the year. Just awful. No production, not fantasy viable at all. He just happened to score a touchdown last week. It's probably the only reason you've heard his name for over the course of the last month. So that's brutal. You know, that's where you are with the Carolina offense. Jonathan Stewart, we all know what he is. Last week, he gets 66 yards and a score. He's gotten in the end zone four times in the last 4 weeks. So that helps. But, you know, he's a plug and play guy when he's your RB2 or even in a flex scenario. Outside of that, you can't expect any upside. So that's it on Washington and Carolina. We're going to head to a break here. We'll come back. We'll go rapid fire with the last bunch of games before we go to College Game Day with Joe and Rich to break down the five bowl games today. So it's Mike and George, Roto Experts in the Morning. We're finishing up after this. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blewett and George Kurtz taking it all the way till 10 o'clock, laughing because Joe Lisi, my compadre, was on a phone call during the break. And it's kind of a funny moment there, but good stuff. That's all right. But it's all good. We're going to actually have a call right now. I believe it is Joel. Joel, what do you got for us?
How's it going, guys?
Good, man. What do you have for us?
Just a quick question. I have a sit start. It's a half point per reception, bonus points for long touchdowns. At running back, it's between Ingram, the backup running back in San Diego, Peterson, and Dixon. I need two.
George?
All right, so Ingram, Farrow, AP, and Dixon. Boy, we haven't discussed AP. I think people got to calm down about Adrian Peterson. Yes, he's going to play tomorrow. He was awful when he was in there earlier in the season, and that offensive line has not gotten any better. And I don't expect him to play. All right, and I don't expect him to play anywhere near a full complement of snaps tomorrow. I know it's the Indianapolis defense, which is makes me hesitate somewhat, but I'm not starting him. Maybe next week we can talk about this, but I'm not starting him here. I think you have to go Farrow here. He's the one starter there against San Diego. He'll get some touches there. Ingram or Dixon? I'm going Ingram. I don't really love it. I don't really like it at all. I kind of do like Dixon.
But I like Dixon. I actually like Dixon tomorrow, George.
So who are you sitting? Farrow?
God, this is a hard one. This is a good call.
Right. It's not easy.
This is a good
Ingram,
call.
Ingram, Farrow, I'd Dixon.
I could go. I want to have Dixon in there, I think. To your point, I don't know that I could bench Ingram. Simply because of the ability there. Farrow, will he see that full complement of touches? We talked earlier in the game how we expect that game flow to be mostly passing. So what's Kenneth Farrow's upside, really, against the Raiders? I don't love it. I think Dixon's got the most upside. I think Ingram gets goal line carries, so that's probably the way I'm going to go. I think I want Kenny Dixon and Mark Ingram in here with Farrow being third. AP, listen, obviously he's the most talented of the bunch. They can't run at all. The Jerick McKinnon, Matt Asiata debate was worthless because the offensive line is terrible. And it's not necessarily their fault. A bunch of guys have gotten hurt. I did the write-ups on the offensive lines for Roto Experts, the exclusive edge package, which, by the way, you can sign on to rotoexperts.com and get the exclusive edge package by entering a discount for free radio and get all of George's articles and tons of information and rankings each and every week. I'll hit the bell for a plug right there. But the write-ups I did were, they were already in question because Phil Loadholt, who was supposed to be on the team going into July, retired due to injuries. So they've had guys that were back in July. Four of those expected starters are not in right now. It's why they can't block. It's amazing that Bradford's still upright. But for me to put AP in here and a risk when George just illustrated that he's not going to play a full load of snaps, it's very unlikely that he will. What can I say? If he breaks off a 60-yard touchdown, then egg on our face. But you have to trust the process in these scenarios, and I don't see him getting the number of touches. That call was really good. To Joel, I would say we're going Dixon and Ingram. If you want to put Farrow in over Dixon, George will probably side with you, but I want Kenny Dixon in that game tomorrow. I just like his matchup.
Can I ask you one more?
Sure.
Okay. I need same league. I need to pick three of these. Nelson, Crabtree, Tyrell Williams, Watkins.
Nelson, Crabtree,
wow,
Terrell Williams.
These are nice options here.
Yeah, those are good.
He said three, so we got to sit one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to sit Jordy Nelson. If we're talking minus 20 degree wind chills tomorrow, I cannot see how they're going to be able to throw the ball with any kind of regularity and any big plays coming here. It's because of your options mainly. Crabtree, Tyrell, Williams, and Watkins. I have all these guys, including Nelson, in my top 15. I'm not sure you can go wrong here, but I don't see why you need to take the chance with Nelson. Maybe they can't throw the ball to him. Maybe it is that cold. It is that windy. I'll sit Nelson here.
Yeah, and the only game I guess I can point to where weather really impacted us, and you know he is who he is, but Antonio Brown going into that game against Cleveland a few weeks ago, there was expectations that he could have a monster game. And as the weather started to go south and it started to come out with reports where there was a lot of wind, as there will be in Chicago tomorrow, people backed off of that. Now he ends up with an 8-catch-for-76-yard game, but he's also one of the most targeted receivers in the NFL. Jordy's not quite at that level. I do think that they can mix it around a little bit. They'll try to be better running the ball. Maybe Ty Montgomery's a little better, but that weather is extreme, and I think George makes a fair point here. So the only game I can point to where weather really impacted was Antonio Brown. He ended up with a good game, but he's the best receiver in the league. Jordy Nelson's not quite there. So I think we sit Nelson there. I'm willing to take that recommendation with George and move on with the other three options we have. That's Crabtree, Watkins, and can't remember the third one. But in any event, Joel, I think you're in good shape. You obviously have a good team here. You're in the semis, so good luck with that, and Godspeed, and hopefully you call us next week when you're in the finals. So moving on from there, we will talk a little bit about these games. George is going to be rapid fire. We only have a few minutes left. We talked about Kenny Dixon there. Ryan Matthews is actually a little bit of a solid DFS play. Your thoughts on Ryan Matthews tomorrow with Wendell Smallwood on IRR for the year?
No, not playing him in DFS either. That's the number one run defense they're going up against there. Yeah. I'll pass.
Yeah. He's more of a tournament play than a cash play for sure, but you have some options there. As far as the quarterbacks are concerned, Flacco and Wentz, I think you can back away from those. You mentioned Lions at Giants. You mentioned that Stafford you're backing away from if you have legitimate options. So you've downgraded everybody on the Detroit offense. Odell, we don't need to talk about that, but do you have any thoughts about Eli having any kind of a game tomorrow, or is he out? Is he on your in your doghouse?
I can make this real simple. The only player I'm starting in this game is Beckham.
Right. In that game period.
In the game period, yeah, both teams. I don't trust Stafford. We go off on and on about this. I mean, he dislocated the middle finger. He's got torn ligaments in it. Going to be wearing a glove, and it's going to rain.
Yeah.
I don't see how he can grip that football with any kind of adrenaline and really fire that ball. Don't see it. Riddick probably going to miss the game, so that takes him out of consideration. I think he might have been a decent play here if he was healthy.
Alshon Jeffrey back in the mix, but we've talked about this weather extensively.
Don't care.
Right. You're out on Alshon, right?
He's another guy. What was he doing when he was in there?
Nothing.
Wasn't doing anything with Jay Cutler. Wasn't doing anything with Brian Hoyer. Now you got to plug him in and minus 20 degree wind chills at Matt Barkley? No.
So Jordan Howard really the only viable start there on the Bears, yes?
Yes, I like Jordan Howard.
Okay. We're going to Minneapolis, Minnesota at in Indianapolis. Colts, Vikings. We talked a little bit about Minnesota there with AP. That running game is just really tough to trust. But how about Andrew Luck going up against a really solid Vikings defense?
I said, I don't know if you could sit Andrew Luck. He's not in my top eight, so I have him at nine. I don't love the matchup. One good thing, Hilton will be in the slot, so he won't see a lot of Xavier Rhodes. No Moncrief, though. So, Hilton's going to get so much pressure here. Minnesota's going to get their sacks. You know, that front's going to come after him with that offensive line. They're going to hit Luck. So sacks are coming. I wouldn't be surprised with a couple of turnovers, too. I'm not seeing the Minnesota defense. People get worried about that. But I like Minnesota in this game.
You got to like LeSean McCoy and Sammy Watkins in Buffalo. Anybody on the Browns that you like?
Yes. Listen, Terrell Pryor, I just can't trust RG3 to get him the ball consistently. Not really, no. Crowell, though, all of a sudden, he's back.
Yep. So we got an option there. Last game, Jags-Texans. Give me something real quick there before we say goodbye.
Don't really want to trust anybody on Jacksonville or Texans. Lamar Miller, I'll go with him. That's it.
Yeah, so there we go. Unfortunately, DeAndre Hopkins' season has been buried. Brock Osweiler's going to have to figure it out next year, but it hasn't happened this year. Bill O'Brien's going to be on the hot seat if they don't win this division. That's it, folks. We went rapid fire there. Good stuff, George, as always. Don't hurt your back shoveling. We'll talk to you folks next week. Mike Bluta, George Kurtz coming up next. It's College Game Day with Joe Lisi and Rich Cirminiello. We got five bowl games today, and they're going to talk about it extensively. Have a great week, everybody. Stay warm.